And we are back. Thank you guys so much for joining us. And another segment, my favorite segment of the show, as always, our interview. And this is sort of a continuation of my mea culpa tour, having the guys on who were right at the bottom in March, and you know, me being wrong at the bottom. I thought that, you know, things were going to be a lot worse. And one of the reasons I want to have on these guys is, A, I want to learn from them. What did I miss? What did they see? And then also, so you guys can learn the exact same thing and also understand that if you want to be a serious investor, the things you get wrong are where you're going to learn the most. So without further ado, one of those guys who drilled it is Mr. Todd Sullivan of Canapreneur Partners. Todd, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a long time coming.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
No
problem. I love this stuff. It'll be fun.
Yeah, yeah. Well, hey, Todd, really quick, before we get into what you saw and kind of your outlook going forward, kind of give us a background of what you do, where you came from, and how you came to start running money.
So kind of an entrepreneur slash investor my entire life. And about 2007, I kind of started emailing commentary to Seeking Alpha. And at the time, Seeking Alpha was a startup website. And I kind of read it. And there was like 8 or 9 contributors to it at the time. I think just probably 5 or 10,000 now. And the person who ran it, I think it was David Jackson at the time, you know, emailed me and said, you know, instead of emailing me, just give me your blog address and I'll just scrape your blog for these articles. I said, great. And then I Googled, what's a blog? I had no idea in 2007 what a blog even was. Ended up going on the old Blogger platform, the Google Blogger platform. And in a couple months, I started getting picked up in the Journal and the Times and on the blog watch list, stuff like that. And the blog kind of just kind of exploded, you know what I mean? And
yeah.
I kind of went to a pay model in 2009. People from the blog started asking me to, you know, manage some money for them. So I started a small hedge fund that I ran until last year. And it just led to a lot of things. So it's just been a crazy ride. And, you know, it just really came down to just posting my thoughts online. It really was just an online diary of what I was seeing, what I was thinking, and a couple stock picks thrown in. And, you know, we tracked the stock picks on the website. So, you know, sometimes you get people who say, oh, I bought this 4 years ago. Well, you know, if we did, it's tracked on there in a spreadsheet. So it gave a level of transparency to it that I think a lot of things don't have. So people seemed to like it, and it kind of took off from there. And then, you know, I got into the cannabis game last year on the private side, not the public markets, just because I kind of see where the ball's going with that whole space. And I wanted to be a part of it from the ground floor. So I shut the hedge fund. You know, you can't really serve 2 or 3 masters well, right? So kept the blog, shut the hedge fund, and have moved into the cannabis game full time. But, you know, investing is still my passion, and, you know, markets and things like that. It goes hand in hand with everything you do in your life. So it's still something I'm deeply into. So in the situations like what we saw in March and stuff, it can lead to, while it's very scary at the time, it can also be very profitable. I always say bear market, fortunes are made in bear markets. And I continue that to believe to be true.
We preach that all the time. I completely agree with you. Okay. So now moving to that, and the way that you and I ran into each other is, we ran into each other on Twitter. I was very bearish at the bottom. And to be fair, you know, I was thinking about this last night before we came into it and wanted to also get your take on it. Cause I'm kind of dissecting, you know, looking back and seeing the things you get right, seeing the things you get wrong, what you missed. I think I suffered from some bias because we had held up really well during that time. And I don't know if you've had this happen, but when you're right, it's often really hard to pivot. And often pivoting is exactly what you need to do. What did you see down there when you and I had our exchange? And I didn't jokingly say, but I said, look, if we go to new all-time highs this year, I'm going to have the guy on my show. So here we are. What did I miss and what did you get right?
So do you remember back in 08, 09, David Tepper, I think it was 2009. The guy just crushed everybody, right?
Yep.
He crushed the market, crushed everybody. And I was on CNBC one time, And they asked him, you know, what made you get into all the – he got into all the bank stocks, right?
I remember, yep.
And yeah, and people's like, why would you possibly do that? Everybody is bearish, you're getting killed. And, you know, he goes, I actually read the documents, you know, like the TARP loan, the documents. He goes, and I realized that they weren't going to let the banks fail. And if they didn't let them fail, he goes, they're going to be worth more money over time, right? It was really a simple thing. But everyone else was thinking – remember the article with Bank of America was – going under. Everybody was going under, right?
Yep.
It was just sheer panic. But he realized that the Fed and the government weren't going to let that happen. And if it didn't happen, there's money to be made. He obviously was right. So when I was sitting there in March at the low, you know, I looked back and I'm like, okay, it's an election year. So we're going to get a massive aid package because neither party is going to be the party that stood in the way of an aid package, right?
Yep.
I kept looking outside my door. I'm like, you know what? There's more delivery trucks outside my door every day. So that means people are still shopping. They're spending the stimulus money. Or with the payroll protection loans, they're still out at work. They're sitting home, but they have paychecks coming in. Then the weekly unemployment benefit package, if you looked at it in Massachusetts, right? If I was making 50 grand before I lost my job on unemployment, I was making the equivalent of about 80 grand after with the between my unemployment and my $600 a week bonus check.
Yep.
So I said – people are losing their jobs, but they actually have more disposable income right now. People are shopping like crazy. Corporations were just drawing down inventories, right? No matter which store you went into, the shelves are half empty, right? So put that together. Increased disposable income, increased sales, decreased costs because inventories are going down. I knew Q1, Q2 profits were going to be very good. They weren't going to be nearly as bad as people thought. And even if they were just mediocre, the market was going to rocket higher.
Yeah.
So those three things, that and knowing that there was massive aid packages coming, there's no way it wasn't going to come. And if that comes, it was going to go higher. So that's why I stayed in then. I just – what I was seeing, actions being taken by governments and the way the aid packages were being set up, people were correct in that millions and millions were going to lose their jobs. I think it was 22 million lost their jobs. But they were very wrong on the economic impact that was going to have because of all the aid and all the programs. And that led to the results not being as bad and the market, you know, turning around and going higher pretty quick.
Yeah, no, great call. One of the things that I wanted to discuss with you and dig in a little bit deeper was this to me, looking back on it, I think I was sitting there looking at it going, well, look, you, these businesses have been blown to pieces and businesses drive every, small business make up 60% of the jobs in this country. And looking at all that economic damage and saying, look, you can't get past that, and really not focusing in on what you were talking about, the fact that this stimulus was really different. This stimulus was bypassing everything else and going directly into people's pockets. They were it was like a minigun, right? Like a Federal Reserve just spraying it everywhere. I think they've changed the game, Todd. And I'd like to hear your thoughts on it, meaning as long as the currency value isn't a problem, and it clearly isn't now, if they can sort of, with this new paradigm shift, they can sort of manufacture an economy, can't they? I mean, if you're willing to just print as much as it takes to fill in the hole, and I'm not trying to go off on some inflationary tangent, just looking at it and saying, if you're willing to just absolutely pump the currency into the hole that was just created, things can essentially – this was the first recession in U.S. history where consumer incomes rose, right? If you're willing to do that, this sort of makes sense, does it not?
In theory it does. But in reality – and so it's funny is that I am now where I think you were in March. Okay?
Gotcha.
The thing about early March is that businesses were still open. They weren't shutting down in mass. You know, the theory is people still had jobs to go back to. Okay, so when and then as COVID results started improving, the market was like, okay, Q1, Q2 earnings were pretty good, right? Now COVID's almost over. We got the aid. We're going to pick up through the fall. And now the actual economic damage is starting to become apparent, All right. So my state in Massachusetts, 37% of small businesses have evaporated since COVID. 44% of them in Boston.
Jeez.
Okay. So where are the jobs? I think, you know, we're still 9.8 million people unemployed. That's a net, right? From where they were before COVID.
Right.
8 million people have now slipped into poverty. 30 to 40% of small businesses in the U.S. are gone. We're not talking shut for 6 months. We're talking gone.
Right.
Okay. Let's assume this virus is a miracle virus and cures COVID in 3 months, right?
Yep.
Those jobs aren't there to go back to.
Right.
The restaurant just doesn't open up. A restaurant owner that just lost everything and shut his doors, when COVID's cured, doesn't say, oh, okay, I'm going to reopen now. That's not how it works.
No.
Right? We see rents crashing. We see commercial real estate. Loans are starting to get under stress now. Go buy a strip mall in the Northeast, and I dare you to find one that doesn't have at least one or two closings.
Yeah.
Right? Now, Walmart's packed, Target's packed. What we're seeing is the greatest wealth transfer from mom and pop to the multinationals or large companies in the shortest time in the history of the world. Think about that. We just wiped out 35 to 40% of businesses in the U.S.
Yeah, it's.
Think about that. And those are the major job drivers. So who's being hurt by this? Of course, the economically most sensitive are being hurt like they always are, right? We're allowing hundreds of people in a Walmart, but not more than 10 people in a restaurant. So the restaurant goes under. All those people lose their jobs. These are restaurant workers. These are people either second jobs or it's a primary job for them. They're gone. Where are they going? So even if we have another aid package, I don't think it'll have nearly – it maybe have an emotional effect at first. But the reality is I don't think it's going to make much of a difference on the actual economy. I think the actual economy is going to start to slide. I don't think this Christmas season is going to be that great. And I'm really worried about 2021. I really am. If we have split Congress, right, we're going to be fighting over aid packages, right? They fought a little bit at the beginning, but it was election year, so they all played nice because, you know, no one wanted to hold up people's checks.
Yep.
Now it might be split, so now you have a different story. Priorities of where the money's go, how it's going to be distributed. It's going to drag out a lot longer. You know, this is not, in my opinion – anywhere. It's very different than the 08-09. That was a financial mess that led to a housing crisis. I think this has the potential to be longer running, not as severe at the bottom, but longer running. I mean, really, by end of 2009, we were on the upswing and it's continued on, right?
Yeah.
I think this could drag on for years because I think we didn't lose as many small businesses in the Great Recession. You know, the financial people were hurt, right? The bankers were hurt, right? They were out of work. The mortgage people were hurt. The real estate agents were hurt. The pizza shops were still good. Now the pizza shops are gone. The restaurants are gone. Everything. It's getting worse. What is happening and my concern is that we have more lockdowns coming. Okay. Lockdowns haven't proven to work. If you look at it, you know, Florida has 2 million more people than New York State, didn't lock down. Has less than half the deaths per million people than Florida does. I'm sorry, than New York does. York locked down. So lockdowns weren't effective. The only thing lockdowns effectively did was destroy businesses and destroy those lives. And I do think, based on what I'm reading every single day, more lockdowns are coming, which means the 30 to 40% of small businesses that are gone is probably going to be 40 or 50%. Or higher, depending how long they lock down. There's not enough aid money to help those people. You get to a point where if you have a $3 or $4 trillion aid package, that people start to wake up and like, what do you mean? Things are so bad, we need $3 trillion, right? That kind of wakes people up. So I'm very, very concerned about the next year, and I think what makes me the most concerned about it is the dislocation between, you know, it's really. You know, walk around and, you know, Peter Lynch used to go walk in malls and say, okay, these stores are packed every day. I want to start investing in these stores and look at these stores for investment possibilities, right?
Right.
Walk around. Go to a mall.
It's bad.
Right? You'd be one of 40 people in an entire mall. Mall of America is a ghost town in Minneapolis.
Yeah. Oh, geez. I didn't think about Walt. Yeah.
Right. Walk around and look what's going on. And then and look yourself and say, yeah, the stock market is the all-time high and you can't justify it. how can you justify a market being at all-time high when almost half the small businesses are gone, unemployment more than doubled?
Well,
I can't justify it. Unless I say, oh, they're going to come up with a miracle cure tomorrow. We're going to somehow vaccinate, you know, what, four or five billion people worldwide in an appropriate time frame, and that the government's going to pour money in, and all these businesses that have evaporated are going to magically reopen in a short amount of time. And well, I just don't see that as a scenario.
Yeah, the other thing that you make a really good point on, this is kind of one of the ones that has had me scratching my head, is everybody goes, oh, well, we're going to open up the business to get back to work. And you go, listen, it's not just that, like you said, they're gone. The other thing is that they're financially wrecked. They can't they can't open another business. It takes capital to open a business.
Yes.
And I don't – and that's why I sort of think that – that I don't really think that they've got an option. I mean, to me, I think that if I was to lay it out, and you and I both know how when you try to pick paths and say this is how it's going to roll, you know, big caveat there. But I kind of see the rally going on for a while here, a little bit into 2021, and then seeing that point where people go, oh, okay, here's the reality, and then getting a market shock. And then I think from there – I think they will do a $3 or $4 trillion stimulus. I mean, as crazy as that is, I just don't see how they can justify not doing it.
I don't know. I mean, I look at how things went, and regarding, you know, talking about your timing of it, you know, I think, you know, businesses profited in Q1 because they're just running down inventory and sales are high. In Q2, there's a lot of inventory restocking, so that stimulated up manufacturing and stuff like that. So people thought things were getting better. You know, I think Q3, as it starts rolling out, you're going to kind of get some flatline stuff or some declines in some areas. I think Q4 is the first one that really starts to shock people because, you know, you look at the jobs report today, it was really disappointing. And if you look at the last few months, where, you know, that V recovery, well, that upside of the V is only about halfway up, and it's starting to flatten.
Yeah,
you know, it's starting to flatten out, and so that tells me, you know, 6-7% unemployment, that might be where we're at for a while.
Yeah, higher structural unemployment, right?
Yeah, yeah, and if that's true, market does not deserve to be where it is because the spending declines that go along with that. The, you know, and don't forget, we were paying rent for 6 months. We were paying mortgages or car payments for 6 months. Now defaults are starting to rise at the banks because, oh, by the way, people spent all the aid money. They didn't really pocket it. They spent it.
Yep.
And now the bills are due. And of course, they don't have the money to pay the bills because the jobs are gone. So they're not, you know, people spent this money assuming like, hey, in my restaurant job in 3 months will be back open. Or if that's closed, I'll go get another one. Well, I mean, walk downtown in the Boston area, the financial district, it's a ghost town. Yeah. Those restaurants are all gone. I mean, we're talking restaurants that are there for 60, 70, 80, 90 years. Family restaurants around us have been here for 90 years. Gone. They made it through the Great Recession, probably 10 recessions they made it through. But now they're gone. And, you know,
Todd, when you look back on this, I understand the public safety issue. We were sounding the alarm on COVID for economic reasons as early as January. Yep. So I did not know it was going to be this bad. I did think it would be a seriously economically disruptive thing. But when I look back on it, I understand the need to protect public health. The minute they went into these lockdowns, if it extended longer than 6 weeks, right? When they kept doing these rolling, I remember sitting there going, "What in the world are these people thinking?" Like right? You cannot. We can't eradicate a virus at the cost of our entire economy. Was with that? What do you think that imbalanced response was?
Because they didn't act. So what they did was they didn't actually lock anybody down. They locked businesses down.
That's true.
Okay. They locked down small business. If your business had under 30,000 square feet, which is a Walmart supercenter or 100,000 square feet, whatever it is, right? If you had 5,000 square foot restaurant, they effectively shut you down. You can't have more than 12 people inside. Well, I got 6 staff in my kitchen, a waiter, a waitress. So I got 6 customers today, right? But at the same time, they locked down restaurants and wouldn't let people in. They allowed thousands of people in the streets to demonstrate or to protest or to do political gatherings or whatever. So it's like they lock down business that creates jobs and let people go in the street do what they wanted. So they didn't lock anybody down. The business lockdowns were a horrific mistake. They were a disaster, and they're destroying lives. There was no advantage to that. There was no health benefits to that. If you look at every state that locked down the most, Massachusetts, New York, California,
Washington,
they all have three of the highest death rates in the nation. So lockdowns didn't work. It's a fact.
Yeah.
You can say whatever you want to say. It's a fact. So because they didn't lock people down. They locked down businesses.
Okay,
they destroyed businesses.
Look, I am not a conspiracy theorist at all. I've always joked around and said that I'm not a conspiracy theorist because they don't pay well. Okay, but watching that whole thing that you just laid out, watching them shut down commerce, especially small business, which is the engine of this economy, always has been, and then allowing hundreds of thousands of people to protest in the street. I understand where the conspiracy theorists are coming, because I'm looking at that going, this makes zero sense to me. Do you think this is just classic government incompetence, or do you think there? I found myself having to at least entertain the conspiratorial side because I think the response was so ridiculous. How do you process that?
I would have thought that, but, I look at my state. It's run by a Republican governor, and, I'm a Republican, and I honestly, in the next election, would vote for a ham sandwich instead of him. I think that they didn't know what to do. So they did what they could for the illusion of doing something to make you safer, right? Mm. By closing down schools, we made you safer. Well, kids are less prone to being severely sick from COVID than they are from the regular flu. That's a statistical fact.
Right.
I think 140 kids under the age of 18 have died.
Right.
Four times that died of the flu last year. 10 times that will die from suicide this year. So, but we closed every school, right?
Right.
And, we closed small business. So we're given the illusion of activity for safety to make people feel safe so they didn't panic. But the reality of what they did was nothing. They selectively closed certain areas because they could police that. Look at the guy in New York yesterday. I think it was the Bronx or Brooklyn. A guy was actually arrested in his business for not following COVID protocols. They arrested him in New York City. Okay. Now, this is 1 week after I turned on the TV on Thanksgiving morning and saw hundreds, maybe thousands of people at the damn finish line of the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade.
Right.
Packed together tight. But right. This guy lets an extra four people in his restaurant and they arrest him. It's just a complete – there is no plan. There is no organized response. It's just – they're just, like you say, throwing stuff against the wall, seeing what sticks. And unfortunately, the easiest thing to police are sandwich shops, restaurants, or whatever. I've seen cops going through these places. I've never seen a cop in a Walmart or a Target.
Yeah.
Never seen a cop in a grocery store. And Walmart's packed. People go on the aisles, go right next to each other. They'll stand right next to each other. That's fine. But, restaurants got to have these big partitions between each other. There's just no rhyme. There's no consistency, no rhyme or reason. So, I think
logic
they've dug their own grave on this one.
Yeah.
There's no logic whatsoever. It's just people are running around. I think, honestly, there's nothing a politician loves more than a press conference that they get to dictate to people. And I think some of that had a lot to play. Cuomo's on there literally every day. In our state, it's Governor Baker's, and there Gavin Newsom is, when he flies back in from his private vacation, wherever he is, then he comes down and tells people not to leave their house. and the hypocrisy, it's just – making it up as they go along.
Yeah, I put out a tweet today that said my new career goals are to get rich enough to get a bailout and be elite enough to privately break the laws I publicly endorse. It's staggering. Yeah. Okay, so before – you're on a tight timeline today, so we don't have you for long. But okay, so saying all that, and I don't expect trades or anything like that. But how are you positioned then going into 2021?
So we made a lot of buys in March. And, we bought some companies that I know are going to be around for a while. Bought some pipeline companies, Williams and Kinder Morgan, that were yielding over 12% at that time at the lows. So, picked up a 10 to 12% dividend that's going to grow. almost double digits for the next 4 or 5 years. And it's shipping natural gas. And so, you know, results may suffer a little bit, but the cash flows are safe and the natural gas still needs to flow through the pipes. So I like those. I sold a lot of my consumer stocks. I did invest in a Canada stock, IIPR. They don't touch the plant, but they're a REIT and do sell leasebacks. Wow. And, you know, cannabis has proven completely and utterly recession resistant. It's been exploding through the pandemic. So I figure, hey, you know what? We're going to need a lot more cannabis as more states legalize. This is a REIT, the only publicly traded REIT. I think the one more might have just come out, but these guys are by far the class of the industry. So, you know, we bought that, I think, down in the 40s in the pandemic. It's at like 150 now. So
that works.
It's paying a solid growing dividend. So, I mean, anything you bought in March is pretty much doing better. So it's not to look at. But that's how I position a portfolio. Kind of businesses I think are essential. I still hold Apple. I've had that for years and don't intend to get rid of that any soon. No, I did really miss the tech explosion in it, you know, like the Zooms and the Pelotons and stuff like that. But I mean, everything I bought in March has done really well, and we're getting great cash flows from it too. So you get double digit cash flows off an investment that is also going to double or triple in value over time. It's pretty nice. So,
well, and eventually, and I think we're getting close to this, but eventually the market will care about cash flows and profits again. It's been a long time.
Yeah.
Long time since that's mattered, but I feel like that's knocking on the door, right?
Yeah, it will. It will. And, you know, I think that 2021 is going to be a rough year. And I think a lot of people are looking at it like a fresh start. We'll get the virus behind us. And we probably will. I mean, we always get viruses behind us eventually. But I think what's going to be left is going to be a lot scarier than people think it's going to be.
Yeah.
There's no magic wand to reopen all these businesses that are gone. You just can't snap a finger and do it. It just doesn't happen that way.
No.
You know, if they go under quickly, they take years to build. So.
Yep. No, I agree, man. Well, hey, I know you got to get going, and I would really like to get you on again where we can go for more like 45 minutes to an hour and dig into some stuff again, because I think you've got a lot.
Yeah, anytime. Yeah, all right, pal. Fun. I enjoyed this.
Yeah, hey, we'll stay in touch. Anyway, hey, Todd, and how really quick, how do people get a hold of you? How do they can follow you on Twitter at Todd Sullivan, TODDSULLIVAN, right?
Yeah. Yeah, you follow me on Twitter, Canopreneur Partners in Massachusetts. It's Canopreneur Partners. And then my website's Value Place.
So. All right. Well, anyway, thanks for being with us, everybody. The Todd Sullivan, going to get him back on again. And I hope you all enjoyed it. As always, we will be back next week with another great interview we got lined up. Our old favorite Kevin Muir will be joining us, and we'll see you then. In between now and then, have a wonderful weekend, and go Hawks.
Opinions expressed in this program are for general information purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or any specific security. It is only intended to provide education about the financial industry. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult your financial advisor prior to investing. Any past performance discussed during this program is no guarantee of future results. Any indices referenced for comparison are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. As always, please remember investing involves risk and possible loss of principal capital. Please seek advice from a licensed professional. Bulwark Capital Management is an investment advisor representative of Clear Creek Financial Management, a registered investment advisor.